Okay, you should have your Bibles. Well, we've been back here in Exodus 20, and we're continuing. We'll pick up where we left off about talking about the issue of putting ourselves in Adam's position when it comes to our passage in Romans 13:1. For there is no power but of God. To really appreciate the issue that power is the methodology by which God's business was to be carried out upon this earth. Adam knew a lot more, I believe, than most people ever give him credit for, in the fact that he was obviously made aware of the fact that the seventh day was the Sabbath to God, and that Sabbath being in itself an expression of, it's a Hebrew expression for something being put to an end, a cessation or a rest. And God having done the two things that he did there in Genesis 2, 1, 2, and especially in verse 3, blessing it and sanctifying it. And then we see when God put that into the law contract, again, if you think for a moment why no one was, and God was not wanting anybody to be keeping the Sabbath, if you understand and appreciate the fact that, and I'll probably mention this again, that you had, if you, as far as God's quest and to repossess the earth, you think about what took place after Adam sinned. Man quickly devolved into the point where he was about ready to destroy himself on the off the face. There's just a mess. The wickedness was so much that God had to judge the earth by flood. As soon as the flood is over, Noah and his sons begin to repopulate the earth with, of course, their wives. Immediately, the adversary gets back underway. And you have, of course, the Tower of Babel incident where God has to judge there. And you're at Genesis now 10, 11. What happens in Genesis 12? Abraham. What has God been doing? He has now relegated the nations, the Gentile nations. They are given up, right? But he still has determined to repossess this earth and use men to do it, just like he did with Adam. Folks, when we're done with this, you're going to hopefully see far more significance of why you have the first Adam here and you have the last Adam here. Jesus Christ, by the way, when Jesus said that the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath, that's being uttered as an Adam who knew what he was doing with the power that was delivered to him. But anyway, that's one of the reasons why commemorating the Sabbath doesn't come up until Exodus, because God raised up Abraham to be the arm through which he was going to repossess his earth, right? But he couldn't do it with just Abraham, could he? What did he tell Abraham? He was going to make of him a what? Great nation. He's going to do it through a nation of his own creation. And Abraham wasn't a nation. Abraham was a man. And by the time you get to the end of the book of Genesis, how many are in that nation that go down into Egypt? About 70-ish. That's still not the nation yet. But what happens during 400 years while they're down there? That nation is now developed. So he raises up a deliverer. Everything is just a dress rehearsal for what's going to happen out here. He raises up that deliverer, Moses, brings them out of the land of Egypt, gives him his name. Now they are in a state in which he can begin to use them, but he has to do some things. This is why it's all related in connection with his Jehovah name. What is he going to do with his nation? Yeah, but he has to do something with that nation. That's all right. Don't worry about it. I'll tell you. I've just given you a moment to think about it. His Jehovah name was designed to do what? Yeah, you're circling the wagons. Justify and sanctify them, but he's got all these Jehovah names. What do they represent for the nation? I'm not asking you to tell me what they all mean, but what is it that he's teaching them? He's going to have to do for them what they can't do for themselves. And what can't they do for themselves? They can't sanctify themselves. Can't justify themselves either, but they can't sanctify themselves. And God is going to take them through a process of making a holy nation, a holy priesthood, a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. And he's going to do that through a process. And one of the things that he's doing in that process, he has to come along and make it so that they are fit for him to use to repossess this earth. Now, going under that law contract was a problem, but it didn't thwart the plan of God to do that. He's still going to be able to do it. But one of the reasons that I only bring that out now, and I'm probably jumping ahead and we'll cover this again, but that's the reason why between here and here, there is no Sabbath observance. The nation of Israel wasn't in a state to be a nation that God could utilize until that time. It's coincidence that they also go under the law at that same time. That's a dumb thing, stupid thing to do. But they were now in a state of being a viable nation when they come out of Egypt. And they go under the law contract. That creates some problems for them, but not a problem for God. God still incorporates one of the major features of what he's going to do with them in the law, and that is that they are now going to have to observe the Sabbath. And he connects that directly with Genesis 2 and verse 3, that this is to be always thought about at the end of every week, end of every week, end of every week, end of every week, on every Sabbath day, if it was our calendar, 52 times a year. You're going to take that day and you're going to think back to what Adam understood and what I understood I was going to do on day 7 of the creation week. What I was about ready to do with that Sabbath. And why I didn't just speak well of it, bless it, but why I sanctified it and hallowed it. So, they were actually taught ahead of this, something about that. Come back to come back to Exodus 16. Flip back a few pages to Exodus chapter 16. This is right in the middle of the five courses of education that God gave them in their secondary education after they flunked the first one because of the plagues. Then he takes them through this second phase of their education to try to educate them into his Jehovahness and grace. And at one point, pick it up at verse 22. This is Exodus 16 and verse 22. And it came to pass that on the sixth day, this is right in the middle of them being told about the manna, and they're going to be fed when they're out in the wilderness. And God's going to teach them something here that's going to get it in their thinking now how this Sabbath is to take place. And he does this through them understanding what they were to do on that seventh day. Look again at verse 22. It says, "And it came to pass that on the sixth day they gathered," they're gathering manna, "twice as much bread, 2 omers for one man. And all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. And he said unto them, This is that which the Lord hath said, Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. Bake that which ye will bake today, and see that which ye will seethe, and that which remaineth over lay up for you to be kept until the morning." Now we've studied this and talked about this. They For five days they were to gather 1 day's rationing. On the sixth day, they were to gather 2 days, because on the next day, the seventh day of that week, the last day of that week, they're to rest. All right? What he's doing there, again, he is teaching him the aspect of the fact that Sabbath is a rest. But the fact of the matter is, they go through a week. It's to be done weekly. It's a weekly Sabbath rest. No work. The work is to be done before that day. Now that's very simple, but that's something that even Adam understood. The work is going to be done before that day rolls around. Adam understood there was a lot of work. In fact, the first order of God's business was to be conducted over the next 6 days. Because on the seventh day after that Sabbath, that first Sabbath of Genesis 2, 1 through 3, no work was going to get done, but God was going to do something spectacular. So we have the issue of it being a rest. We were told back there in Exodus 20, again, the verses we just read prior to this, that they were to remember it. In other words, they have already been confronted with it. They're confronted with it here in the 16th chapter, but now they're to remember it, and that resting is to take place. And even later on, come back to the Exodus, while we're here in Exodus, before we leave it, come to chapter 31, and I just want to point this out as a stark contrast to what we're about to look at, where you and I are concerned with the Sabbath. Come over to Exodus 31, pick it up at verse 12. When God comes back to define in greater detail the issue of the Sabbath and keeping the Sabbath, it says, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak thou also unto the children of Israel, saying, Verily my Sabbaths," notice he says there, "my Sabbaths," plural, "ye shall keep, for it is a sign between," there it is, it's a sign, that's what it was, as one of Israel's signs, "between me and you throughout your generations, that ye may know that I am the Lord." My Jehovah name is wrapped up in this. That does sanctify you. I'm doing that. You can't do that yourself. "You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy unto you. Everyone that defileth it shall surely be put to death. For whosoever doeth any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whosoever doeth any work in the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death. Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations for a perpetual covenant." Again, he says in verse 17, "It is a sign between me and the children of Israel." Notice it's between me and the children of Israel. Not between me and the church, the body of Christ. It's between me and the children of Israel forever. "For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed." Most people, all they think about is, oh, God was taking it easy on that day. He was refreshed and rested, and we need to be refreshed and rested. Blah, you're not even scratching the surface. That's doing nothing to understand and appreciate what the significance of that was about. It's got to be pretty significant because God just put the death penalty to it. It's a little bit more than just simply sitting on your front porch, twiddling your thumbs, and saying, "I'm so glad that God gave me a day that I could rest." God, again, in chapter 31 of Exodus, links it, connects it directly to that seventh day at the end of the creation week. "And he gave unto Moses, when he had made an end of communing with him upon Mount Sinai, the two tables of testimony, tables of stone written with the finger of God." Well, the death penalty is going to be brought against those who would break it. That's how serious of a matter this is. Folks, there's something so serious about this that it has to do with God doing his business and getting his business done upon this earth by repossessing this earth from the adversary so he can do his business. And it all connects with his name, with Israel's calendar, and with the original power that he gave to Adam. It all connects. Jesus said, "I am the Lord of the Sabbath." He's putting himself right in Adam's shoes and saying, what he was going to do here, he failed, and I will succeed in doing. As my Father's son, notice he said, Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Well, I think this goes without saying, but since you're kind of wanting me to go through this, let's at least document it. that there is more than one kind of Sabbath. Come to our epistles. Come to the Colossians chapter 2. And we'll have reason to come back here again, but you and I know very well that in this dispensation of grace in which you and I live, we are not under the law, but under grace. We do not keep any Sabbaths. We're not held to any Sabbaths, any holy days. Even if tomorrow is All Saints Day, or is that today? I don't remember. And one of the things that Paul says here is so serious that if this isn't true, the death penalty would be put to bear upon him. Being a Jew, being a Pharisee, being a member of the children of Israel. And yet he writes what he does here. Chapter 2, pick it up at verse 16. Let no man therefore judge you in meat, or in drink, or in respect of an holy day, or of the new moon, or of the Sabbath days plural. But look at verse 17. Which are a shadow of things to come, but the body is of Christ. Now let's just narrow it down to the one thing that he says there at the end when he talks about the Sabbath days. Folks, in this dispensation of grace, the Sabbath and the Sabbaths of Israel are still a shadow of things to come. They haven't happened yet. There are still things to come that those things that were written back there are yet to be fully realized upon this earth. And it has to do with God's Jehovah name, with Israel's calendar, and with the original power that God gave to Adam. So, there's a plurality of Sabbaths, and back there in Genesis 30, we were just there, we won't turn there again. But God makes it very clear to Israel back there in Genesis 31. I want to make sure I don't misquote it. I'm going to go back to it. I keep saying Genesis. I don't know why. I'm stuck in my head. But Exodus, back there in Exodus 31, when God puts when you have the death penalty being talked about there. Verse 12. The Lord's spoken to the children of, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak thou, he says there in verse 13, he says, speak thou also unto the children of Israel, saying, thus and so. Speak thou also. That is, this is additional information concerning some of the days of rest they are to observe. And notice they're already familiar with what may be called the Sabbath. The weekly seventh day Sabbath is kind of the Sabbath. All these Sabbaths are actually gathered up as a package, a collection that will be connected with the feasts in Israel's calendar. There's going to be a bunch of them, but there's one that is just preeminent in all of them that is week after week after week. That is the Sabbath. And when God takes them and collects them all together, they kind of come under that title of what we talked about there, my Sabbaths. So the Sabbaths of Israel were to be understood as the Sabbath, a weekly Sabbath on every Saturday at the end of every week. And then my Sabbaths, the Sabbaths plural, were designed to educate the nation of Israel as they would go through their calendar. They would be educated into God's Jehovah name, into His Jehovahness, and into His grace. Now let's note some examples real quickly of those other Sabbaths, my Sabbaths. Come over to the book of Leviticus. Come over to Leviticus chapter 16. You have information beginning back there in verse 18 about the scapegoat. The things that were to take place on this very important day in Israel's calendar, which I heard this year the Wake County school system gave everybody the day off. called the Day of Atonement. Today we call it Yom Kippur. Believe me, I'm not saying that that is the actual Day of Atonement that they're observing. I have no idea what's happened to the calendar, but that's what they observe. But in connection with that particular teaching that God is giving the nation of Israel here concerning one of their observances, come down and pick it up at verse 29. It says, "And this shall be a statute forever unto you, that in the seventh month, on the tenth day of the month." Now, see, this, he's giving terminology, he's saying, okay, here's your calendar on this month, on the tenth day of it. Now, if you go, it's just like we observe holidays. Today's Halloween. You know, Thanksgiving is coming up, but Thanksgiving's a little bit different. But when you've got an actual date, the day of it's going to change from year to year, right? So this is not a weekly observance as a Sabbath. This one is going to be in connection with a particular feast. And on the seventh month, at the tenth day of the month, ye shall afflict your souls and do no work at all, whether it be one of your own country or a stranger that sojourneth with you. For on that day shall the priest make an atonement for you and cleanse you, that ye may be clean from all your sins before the Lord. And it says in verse 31, it shall be a Sabbath of rest unto you. All these Sabbaths are Sabbaths of rest. But this is a different Sabbath, different from the seventh day Sabbath. This one is in connection with the Day of Atonement. "It shall be a Sabbath of rest unto you, and ye shall afflict your souls by a statute forever." All I'm after there is that you see that this is not that seventh day the Sabbath, but this is one of God's Sabbaths, plural. And we'll talk about that again later, but that's going to educate them into His Jehovahness and grace. That was a yearly occurrence right there. That's a Sabbath that only happened once a year on the Day of Atonement. And it's going to be incorporated in all these feasts, that by what God does in connection with fulfilling them is going to make it so the nation itself has national spiritual fitness to be utilized by God on the second Sabbath after the first. Now, one of the important ones that we're after is down in Leviticus 23. Come over to chapter 23. Leviticus 23 is a chapter that's really dedicated to outlining the entire calendar, yearly calendar of Israel. So all seven feasts are dealt with in this particular chapter. It sets forth Israel's calendar. And in fact, I have that up here. If we took the timeline and just made it bare bones like it is here, and what I've done up here is just put this very small parenthesis for this dispensation of grace, because I want you, we're not going to think about that at all happening. We're thinking about this in God's perspective of what He's doing to repossess the earth. We're going to be repossessing the heavenly places. In Leviticus, and you can see these coming up here, you have in verse 4 the issue of the first, if you're following their calendar, the first major feast, the first feast is the feast of Passover. And when that occurred at the cross, when its fulfillment took place. Now they had been observing Passover year after year after year after year for thousands of years. All right? Because it's been about that long since Mount Sinai, since Exodus and Leviticus all took place. So for a long period of time they've been observing this. But when Jesus Christ died at Calvary's cross, He did that on the Passover. As a matter of fact, if my understanding's correct, the moment that they nailed Him in the hands, at that exact moment in the temple, the lamb that was to be brought and officially slaughtered had its throat cut at the exact moment He was nailed to that cross. The timing was just unbelievable. And He fulfills the Passover, and that fulfills the first of the Jehovah compound name Jehovah Jireh. Remember what that means? God will provide himself the sacrifice for the sins of the world and the sins of Israel. He will provide himself as the Lamb. Then you come down, verse 6, 7 and 8, you have the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And that took place immediately after Passover. They were just butted up right to one another. And the Feast of Unleavened Bread would be the fulfillment, when it was fulfilled. And that's when it was fulfilled. They had, again, observed the Feast of Unleavened Bread time after time after time after time after time. But here, and without going into all the details of what all the feasts meant, you can do that on your own. But here, when they ate the unleavened bread, he fulfilled his Jehovah compound name, Jehovah Rophekah. You remember what that one meant? Yep, I am the Lord that healeth thee. They had an incurable wound, as the prophet would talk about. They could not cure themselves, but he would heal them. He would provide himself as the Lamb. He would heal them. And then a few days later, you have another one that is fulfilled there, and you see it coming up in verse 9 of Leviticus 23 and running down through verse 14. You have the Feast of First Fruits. And that was fulfilled during just shortly after the Lord Jesus Christ's death, burial, and resurrection. It came when it came up on Israel's calendar, it was fully come. It was fully fulfilled, and God fulfilled to Israel his Jehovah compound name of Jehovah Shalom. What does that mean? I will be your peacemaker. Four of these seven feasts became fully fulfilled. I know that's redundant. Before God suspended his program with Israel, four of them. Three of them are left. The fourth one, of course, was 40 days then later, the day of Pentecost. That's why, without having to turn there, in the book of Acts, it says when the day of Pentecost was fully come. And that assumes that all the three that preceded it, they have fully come as well. So the calendar is being fulfilled. And Jesus operated for them. When you read here in Leviticus, you have Pentecost there in verse 15 and running down through verse 21. And Jesus Christ would fulfill his Jehovah compound name, Jehovah Ra'ah. Remember what that one was? That's right. That's right. That's comes right out of the 23rd Psalm. The Lord is my shepherd, Jehovah Ra'ah. And the nation of Israel needed a shepherd. They needed someone who would not feed upon them, but someone who would feed them. Not like the Pharisees, the Bible scholars and Bible theologians who came from the Bible seminaries. But he was going to be their shepherd. All of that was fully come. And then you get God suspending his program, bringing in this dispensation of grace, and Israel's calendar is left in suspension. And there are three feasts on their calendar yet to be fulfilled. And I try to depict it on this very near the Lord's return. As the day of wrath comes to an end, these are going to be all fulfilled, boom, 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 like that. They're going to get fulfilled very quickly, one right after the other. And you have the next one coming up here in verse 22 down through verse 25. You have the Feast of Trumpets. There's going to be a trump that's going to sound, and commence actually Israel's program when we're taken out at the last trump. Then there's going to be this Feast of Trumpets that's going to take place that's going to signal the fulfillment of the particular feast that depicts the Lord Jesus Christ as Jehovah Nissi. And what is that? The Lord, our conqueror, our conquering hero. He's our, the word Nissi is like a Hebrew expression for a battle guidon, a banner, a battle, the battle guidon that's led to victory. And that you rally around, those are the conquerors, those are the heroes, and they guide on to that. He's going to be Jehovah Nissi as he has avenged his cause and delivered the nation of Israel. The Feast of Trumpets will be fully come. Then you have, beginning in verse 26 and on down through verse 32, you have that Day of Atonement we were just talking about. When its fulfillment takes place, he is going to, on the Day of Atonement, produce the fullness of his Jehovah compound name, Jehovah Zidkenu, which is what? The Lord, our righteousness. He will be the God that provides himself as the Lamb, the God that healeth thee, the God of the peacemaker, the God their shepherd, God their conquering hero, and God their righteousness. And that leaves the last feast to be fulfilled. And that's the one we're after, because it's unique to all the others. And it begins there in verse 33, and it goes on down to the end of the chapter, but it's the Feast of Tabernacles. And the Feast of Tabernacles is when Jesus Christ comes back and something takes place where when he comes back, he ain't going anywhere again. Because he is going to reside here with his Father physically on this earth. The kingdom will be set up and he will be Jehovah Shammah, which is what? The Lord who is ever with thee. Jehovah with thee. He will be here. And this whole calendar was to depict the Jehovah-ness of God being put into effect to make the nation of Israel, Israel as a national entity. And if you're talking about a national entity, a nation, what has it got to have? A government. It has been vested with the powers that be. And he now has a government that is going to be a nation and a government unlike any other. We like to think that the United States is unique on this earth. It may be, but it is not anything compared to what that is going to be, because that is going to be a kingdom, a nation, and a government of absolute righteousness on this earth. And that nation will be spiritually fit to be utilized to actually legally repossess this earth from the adversary and establish God's kingdom upon it. And there's one major feature of him establishing his kingdom upon this earth that you have to appreciate is going to take place on the second Sabbath after the first. Because it was supposed to have taken place back there. Let's get this off. It was supposed to have taken place 7 days after creation week. I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to give you a little overview here, and then beginning on Sunday, we're going to go through and corroborate this and verify this through the remaining notes I have to be able to bring this together. I've just kind of been giving you the overview of it. And I want you to think about it between now and then, too, about what you've learned about God's Jehovah-ness and his Jehovah name, and how he incorporated that in the calendar of Israel to make them spiritually fit as a nation. And we're gonna come back to be It's to me one of the most fascinating things to see those first three chapters of the Bible connect with the last three chapters of the Bible. And what was begun here is going to end here. And everything in the middle here is just like a giant parenthesis. And that's what it is. It's this gigantic parenthesis where when it's all done, it's going to come back together and God's going to say, you know, I've been waiting a long time to finally get to that second week. I've had to put it all on hold. Put it on. Yeah. And as you know, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but that second Sabbath after the first, something happened to where that was put on hold. And really what's going to take place through all of human history to that point is the awaiting of the second Sabbath after the first. Because that's the day that God will bring His city down, His residence on this earth. Folks, that's His business. That's what He wanted to do with Adam. And Adam understood that. I'm fully convinced that Adam understood that the very next Sabbath day, God was going to bring His residence on this earth. And that's why Adam was dealing with the animals. Because all those animals were to be used by him to prepare the area for God to bring that down and to put that upon the beams of his chambers. And there was work to do. There was preparations that needed to be made. The animals were designed to do it. They were designed to do that work. They were designed to do some things that maybe we'll talk about a little bit that Ezekiel was actually given to see. If my understanding is correct, what Adam was supposed to do the next week, this will resonate with Steve. Adam was supposed to frame that thing out. There was a framework. And Adam's that was going to be the next order of business. But it got delayed, and it's still on delay. And in fact, Adam himself won't even be allowed to do it. There's going to be another Adam who's going to do it. And that Feast of Tabernacles, we're going to talk about, has this very unique feature of all the other feasts where they, and we'll, again, I'm just talking and we're going to stop here in a moment, but we'll identify how that calendar for this particular feast, the Feast of Tabernacles, was to take place in 2 weeks. You have 14 dashes up there. There's 7 on the top, 7 on the bottom. That's 1 week, 2 weeks. And the way they were to count it, you have this on this first week, you come down to the end of that and you start on day 1 at that Sabbath. Both of these down, I need a pointer. Both of these down here, these are Sabbaths, see? So you're to start with the first Sabbath, there's 1. Then you count the days, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So he's going to talk about on the first day, on the first and on the 8th. And the first day began on a Sabbath. And the 8th day ends on a Sabbath. You have 8 days total. But day 1 and day 8 are Sabbaths. And you have the first Sabbath. Feast of Tabernacles was to begin, and it ends on the second Sabbath after the first. That's what Jesus is. That's what Luke is referring to when he describes what Jesus was doing in Luke 6, when he says on the second Sabbath after the first. It was on that day of the Feast of Tabernacles that Jesus and his disciples went out there in front of the Pharisees, and they took that grain. And it's one of those things where you say, if they only knew the significance of what he was doing there. Because when he takes his nation, the nation he's going to utilize isn't going to be that rich nation. It's going to be that little poor flock. The first shall be last. The last shall be first. That's going to enter that kingdom. And he was just flaunting that. Not flaunting it. That's a bad way. He was trying to get them to see that. Anyway. Yeah. I sat and just marvel at this stuff. It's just amazing. And then when we see this, we're going to go back and see as Adam stands there and looks out as he's naming those animals with full understanding what the first order of God's business is going to be. He didn't know the next order. I don't believe he knew that. But he at least knew the first order of business. And had an idea, he had an understanding that of the significance of what was going to take place on that second Sabbath after the first. And it's so meaningful to God that he incorporates it into Israel's program, into their calendar as the final feast. And this connects again, I've said it several times tonight, it connects with his Jehovah name, with Israel's calendar, and with the original power that he put in Adam's hands. And the one who's going to wind up with it is the Lord Jesus Christ. That's why I said, in a way, this isn't entirely true, but in a sense, that power comes back together. Now, I say that in a sense. I have to recognize the fact that there are going to be nations, Gentile nations. By the way, I'm going to show you a passage in the book of Zechariah that out there, every Gentile nation has to observe that. Even the Gentile nations are going to observe the second Sabbath after the first. That's how significant that all is to God's business. Well, we're out of time. I've just been rambling. But I'm a rambling man. I'm a rambling kind of guy. Well, we'll stop right there and have some more fun with this on Sunday morning with our heads bowed.